majority conclusion is that these things are real and under intelligent control.
None of the evidence that I have examined would indicate any proof at all that we are being visited by extraterrestrials.
Those are the voices of this country's two leading specialists on unidentified flying objects. Today's Spectrum 95 probes the controversy and mystery surrounding the flying saucer flap. This is Al Moffitt, KPRZ News, reporting on a controversy heard from outside barbershops all the way to the halls of Congress. Is there such a thing as a flying saucer? In a moment, you'll hear the actual voices of people describing those they think they've seen. But first, this message. Some authorities claim sections of the Bible refer to UFOs. Most agree the history of flying saucers date back 200 years. During World War II, they were around, but called Foo Fighters. But no serious investigation began until the things got a name. A private pilot in Nevada named Kenneth Arnold in 1947 saw more than seven discs flying some distance from his plane. He was asked to describe them. He said they looked like saucers, and the name stuck. The Air Force started its investigation of flying saucers. These things were generally laughed off as figments of somebody's imagination until the Washington flap in 1952. The information officer for the Air Force's investigation of UFOs was Al Chop. He lives near Houston today and is deputy public affairs officer for the Manned Spacecraft Center. He describes what happened in Washington that night.
Well, there had been sightings made from the ground, people seeing strange lights in the sky. There had been a radar observation that happened on a Saturday night, and it was carried in the papers throughout the country the next day, the reports of the sightings. And that didn't cause too much of a stir. However, the following Saturday night, the same thing happened. The ground radar at Washington International was picking up UFO returns, and people were reporting eyewitness sightings of strange lights in the sky. And the press, having gone through this thing the week before, were better prepared, and they were down at the gate at the Washington International Airport and were asking for answers to their questions on what these things were that were being picked up by radar. Somehow they got the word that they were being picked up by radar, and so they called me at home, and I went on down there to see if we couldn't answer some of the questions. And when I got down there, why, Life magazine was there and a few other publications, some of the local newspapers. And we did ask the Air Defense Command to send up a group, a flight of interceptors. They did send up a flight. The flight failed to see anything, although we were getting the target returns on the ground and trying to direct them to the targets. They failed to report that they saw anything, and subsequently they went back to Newcastle, Delaware, where they were based.
The majority conclusion is that these things are real and under intelligent control.
None of the evidence that I have examined would indicate any proof at all that we are being visited by extraterrestrials.
Those are the voices of this country's two leading specialists on unidentified flying objects. Today's Spectrum 95 probes the controversy and mystery surrounding the flying saucer flap. This is Al Moffitt, KPRZ News, reporting on a controversy heard from outside barbershops all the way to the halls of Congress. Is there such a thing as a flying saucer? In a moment, you'll hear the actual voices of people describing those they think they've seen. But first, this message. Some authorities authorities claim sections of the Bible refer to UFOs. Most agree the history of flying saucers date back 200 years. During World War II, they were around, but called Foo Fighters. But no serious investigation began until the things got a name. A private pilot in Nevada named Kenneth Arnold in 1947 saw more than seven discs flying some distance from his plane. He was asked to describe them. He said they looked like saucers, and the name stuck. The Air Force started its investigation of flying saucers. These things were generally laughed off as figments of somebody's imagination until the Washington flap in 1952. The information officer for the Air Force's investigation of UFOs was Al Chopp. He lives near Houston today, and is deputy public affairs officer for the Manned Spacecraft Center. He describes what happened in Washington that night.
Well, there had been sightings made from the ground, people seeing strange lights in the sky. There had been a radar observation that happened on a Saturday night, and it was carried in the papers throughout the country the next day, the reports of the sightings. And that didn't cause too much of a stir. However, the following Saturday night, the same thing happened. The ground radar at Washington International was picking up UFO returns, and people were reporting eyewitness sightings of strange lights in the sky. And the press, having gone through this thing the week before, were better prepared, and they were down at the gate at the Washington International Airport and were asking for answers to their questions on what these things were that were being picked up by radar. Somehow they got the word that they were being picked up by radar, and so they called me at home, and I went on down there to see if we couldn't answer some of the questions. And when I got down there, why, Life magazine was there and a few other publications, some of the local newspapers. And we did ask the Air Defense Command to send up a group, a flight of interceptors. They did send up a flight. The flight failed to see anything, although we were getting the target returns on the ground and trying to direct them to the targets. They failed to report that they saw anything, and subsequently they went back to Newcastle, Delaware, where they were based. And along about 2 or 3 in the morning, we asked for another flight because we were still getting these returns. And they sent up another flight, and this time one of the pilots reported that he did see a group of lights that we were trying to direct him to, or a group of targets. And he flew towards them, and obviously from his report, then they appeared to be all around him, which he reported to us. And then they moved off according to the ground radar, and according to his report, he said they're going away. And he then returned to the base, and that's about the gist of what happened in Washington that night.
Those UFOs were high in the sky, but some were reported from other parts of the country more down to earth, such as the UFO Mrs. Paul Trent of McMinnville, Oregon, said she saw in the early 50s.
And I have to look up, and I seen this thing, and I ran into the house to tell him about it. He went one way after a camera, and I went the other way after a camera, and between the both of us, we found it.
Can you tell us what it looked like?
Well, about the best thing I could see would be just about the size of a parachute, without any strings or anything like that. It was all flat on the bottom, and it was silvery color. That was about the only thing it was, but there was no smoke, no noise, either one.
How close to the ground
would
you say it was?
Well, it was just above the electric light wires away. I just, you know, the distance and stuff, I just don't know. It could have hovered for a while, you know, just like that, and he took the picture, and right just as soon as he took the picture, he wound the film to re-roll it, you know, to take another one, and as soon as he took it, it turned and just took off very fast.
And the report of Alfred Ernst, a Minnesota farmer, of an object that landed.
It was hard to look at. I suppose about the size of a washing machine top, I mean, one of these washing machines. it's not the easiest thing to look at. It was very bright.
In Dickinson, North Dakota, several years ago, a UFO skipped around over a drive-in theater. That sighting had a whole crowd of witnesses. The voice of Randall Young.
My wife and I were at the Dickinson drive-in, and it was a clear night. A lot of stores were out, and the wife called my attention to one store in particular, which was back of the screen a little ways, and asked me to watch it for a few seconds, which I did. And this store moved, what appeared to be a store, moved back and forth, sideways, several times. And then it traveled slowly towards the center of the theater there and stopped approximately over the top of the drive-in theater. And here again, it made several more sideways movements. And about that time, I figured that it wasn't an airplane because it was just a white light, something similar to a star. And when it got directly over the theater, why, I got out of the car and looked at the thing, and it seemed to be an oval, flat ship. When it got over the theater, why, you could make out some type of outline of it, as the height, I don't know just exactly.
About what size did it appear to you then?
Oh, it was probably, I'd say about the size of a dishpan or so.
It's common for a sighting to spark a chain of other accounts. Many of them vary widely from the original. Listen to this housewife's account and make your own judgment.
We were up on the second floor, and I looked out the kitchen window, and I saw this thing hovering near the Dickinson water tower, and it glowed a yellowish orange. At first, I thought it was the moon, but I've never seen a perfectly squared one quarter of a moon. I took another look, and I thought, well, I better get my husband up, because so by the time I decided to leave the window to go get him up, the thing started to change shape. And as it changed shape, as if it threw in rockets, and the smoke of an orangish yellow bellowed from the bottom of this thing, and then it just moved off in an easterly direction.
An account of that North Dakota flap is told by Airman Don Gebauer, who was in the control tower of Minot Air Force Base when reports began.
I was working for the midnight shift, and this person called in. They said they saw a plane go down. Said they saw some bright lights in the air, and then they spotted it going down, and then the further down it got, the brighter lights got. And so we took a report on that to begin with, and then about 30 minutes later, we got a call from a mobile unit from the Air Police that guard the missile sites out there. Well, they said they saw the same thing, but it went down, and it came straight down from, they figured, about 20,000 feet. Came down to about 500 feet above the ground. And then they said it shot east of their heading toward Des Minot. I don't know the town around there. But anyway, and then it went straight. After it got down, it went straight across for about 5-10 minutes. Then it went back up and headed back west again.
Now, this couldn't possibly have been a plane?
No, it wasn't, because I checked TRAPCON, which their radar consists of covering right around 500 miles of the area around here. And they didn't have nothing except for B-52 in the air, and that was our own B-52.
In 1956, a group of men with more than a passing interest in flying saucers formed a private, non-profit organization, which they called the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, NICAP. From its start, this organization has been headed by a retired Marine pilot, Major Donald Kehoe. He and his co-workers and some 5,000 volunteers conduct their own investigations of sightings. Kehoe has been, from the start, very critical of Air Force investigations and what he calls the withholding of facts. Recently, Kehoe called a news conference in Washington to say these things are from outer space. He cited many of what he termed prime examples, such as what happened in Exeter, New Hampshire last year.
Recently, and the famous Exeter case up in New Hampshire, and probably most of you are familiar with that, the Air Force did publish an answer and later retracted it. Now, for those of you who may not be familiar, This was a report by two veteran policemen that were Exeter, New Hampshire, and a teenager, 19 years old, who first saw this device and went to the police. They went out to the scene and skeptically, and when they got there, they found exactly what he had described, a very large object hovering close to the ground with lights flashing in sequence, creating such a blinding glare that it lit up the ground for about 300 feet. It even caused animals in nearby buildings which couldn't see this object to get upset, horses kicking their stalls and whinnying and so on. Now this was made, we made this report public, and it was picked up by John Fuller of Saturday Review of Literature, and later published in Look. And somehow that had more effect than any group of sightings that we put out in the last 5 years, probably because of his prestige and the fact that he didn't have any axe to grind. He really went up there and taped interviews with all of the witnesses and came back and said there seems to be no doubt that this thing was there and it's real. The Air Force at first said that this was a mistake caused by a low-flying aircraft, and the police officers were very much incensed by being called incompetent. They stated, well, this was wrong. There were not low-flying aircraft. This was definitely an unidentified flying object. The same thing happened in another case that very same night, which is not so well known, down in Texas. On the night of September 3rd, two deputy sheriffs saw a strange object in the sky, and they parked their cruiser with the lights on near the side of the highway to watch it.
They were Brazoria County Chief Deputy Billy McCoy and Deputy Sheriff Robert Good, both of Angleton. We asked Chief Deputy McCoy to describe the encounter.
As we were leaving Damon, I noticed off over on the right-hand side of the highway there going towards West Columbia, I noticed a bright purple light over there that looked like it was right on the horizon. We were talking about various things, and I called this light to Mr. Good's attention, knowing that he was real familiar with that area over there. And he said, well, it's probably a light over Pompton Station or a light over to a ranch. They've been putting quite a few of those mercury vapor lights in. And I said, well, it just looked too purple to be a mercury vapor light to me. And we continued driving, didn't stop at that time. And I kept watching the light, and as we traveled down the highway, there appeared to be a blue light just seemed to appear right out of this purple light. We were just almost parallel with the light. And as we drove, well, this light, the blue light, seemed to move further over to the right. We pulled over on the right-hand side of the road and stopped and got out and looked at the light briefly. The blue light had moved a good ways from the purple light at this time. We made a U-turn there and stopped on the other side of the highway and got out and looked at these lights through binoculars. At this time, the light seemed to float up in the air just a very few degrees above the horizon and just hang suspended there. So we got back in the car to drive back towards Damon to take one of the back roads and go over towards the San Bernard River to see if we could get closer to it. And we had driven, I guess, about a half a mile back towards Damon. We almost stopped again. We didn't pull off the highway. We just barely creeping. There was no traffic on the highway. And Dude had his window down on his side. And he observed the lights again with the binoculars. And they seemed to still be in the same position as they were. So he laid the binoculars down and said, well, you watch it, and I'll drive on back that way. And just as we started up, he said, are the other lights still there? And I said, man, they're not there. They're right here on us. Well, the object had moved just in a blink of an eye, it seemed like, where they were to right beside the highway. The purple light was illuminating the inside of a patrol car, ground all around us. And here this thing was just about, looked like it wasn't any more than 100, 150 feet in the air. It was right at the side of the highway, completely motionless. There was a bright, almost full moon, almost directly overhead. The moon illuminated the object. We could see the outline very distinctly. We could see the shadow on the ground underneath it, and my gosh, it looked like a football field.
The flying saucer controversy raged anew last month when hundreds of people around Hillsdale, Michigan, saw a series of strange objects or things. The county sheriff there said this.
The bright lights, the bluish-green lights, and so on. Maneuverability from side to side, up and down. And a saucer-like shape to it. Mr. Manor, him and his son were out the farm and observed this object go down into the swamp area. Same time, we had six other cars out there and a University of Michigan professor, and they also observed the same thing, and everybody described the thing as the same. No sound to the darn things at all.
Do you have any ideas of what they might be?
I wish I did. I've had more phone calls here this morning than you shake a stick at. I'm going to put a call into the defense office in Washington and see if they can come up with some answers for me. I'm going to have to call the government on this, as we've got a lot of people who have seen this. Got over 50 people who have seen it at different times, different intervals. Everybody describes the thing the same way.
Do you think, Sheriff, these might be visitors from outer space?
I don't even want to guess at this. I don't believe it yet, but I can't doubt my men. Quoting one of my officers this morning, he said, "Sheriff, I've seen it, but I still don't believe it."
A co-ed at the university in Hillsdale saw the thing and described it like this. Sarah Robichaud.
Last night around 11:30, we'd been watching the storm that was taking place here. And we looked out our second floor dorm window and saw what appeared to be a house almost in the middle of the arb. But we realized there wasn't a house there, so we kept watching it, and it had a yellow glow and the lights were fluctuating. And we watched it for a while, and it was hovering, or seemed to be, because the lights were fluctuating and almost going around. And so we called the civil defense because we'd been asked to call and give a direction and a time. And he called the police. And as they drove up the Arab Road, their red lights bothered whatever we were seeing because it moved up and down and to the right and left.
Mm-hmm.
And the lights fluctuated even more.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came back down the road, and the civil defense man drove around the back of our dorm, and his lights shone across the arb. And this also bothered it because it became very bright, and then it became very dim, and it started to move back across the horizon. So we kept watching it, and the civil defense man came up to our room to watch it, and he watched it for about a half an hour, and he said he would say it was definitely a UFO.
That civil defense director is William Van Horn. His report is considered by NICAP one of the most authoritative ever received.
Looked out the open window. Here the UFO was approximately 1,000 to 1,500 yards from us. I observed this with binoculars. To the right was a red light, and to the left was a white light. A red light at the time that I first observed it was a dim orange in color, and the white light was a quite dim white. The beacon from the airport sweeping over the area was coming around there, and the object seemed to get within a certain distance of the bottom portion of the beacon ray of light and became stationary. It appeared as if it were attempting to avoid this light from the beacon. It would then remain there for just a few moments and then start its descent back down, and as it were coming back down to the ground, approaching the ground, the lights would become dim. This, in essence, is what we observed at that time, Tony, and through the binoculars, I estimated the distance between the two lights to be approximately 20 to 25 feet.
The Air Force's chief UFO investigator is a Northwestern University astrophysics professor named J. Allen Hynek. He went to Hillsdale, investigated, and reported the citizens had seen swamp gas. Whether Hynek was right or not, there are sure to be many co-eds and citizens of Hillsdale who'll remember that incident the rest of their lives. For instance, Madeline English, do you believe in UFOs?
About 1 o'clock, I was looking out the window, and I saw a white glowing object with red lights, and it wasn't an airplane. Yes, I believe in UFOs.
Joe Wilson, were you frightened?
Of course I was frightened. Wouldn't you be? I'm not sure.
Well, when you see something strange out your window, especially out a girl's dorm window, and lights, and you don't know what they are, and you watch for 2 hours, you're frightened.
You've heard a series of UFO sightings that have been reported. Confused? If so, you're not alone. In the next section of Spectrum 95, we try to get an answer to the simple question, what is it? We've subtitled it, Would You Believe Swamp Gas? But now let's pause for the news. Spectrum 95. Part 2, The Flying Saucer Flap, What Is It? The question, what is it, seems simple on the surface. But with unidentified flying objects, it's complicated by the fact that there are no materials ever taken from a UFO, only reports of eyewitnesses. The director of NICAP, Major Donald Kehoe, has little doubt what these things are. Here's his opinion.
Now, these have been evaluated. These sightings have been evaluated by our staff, by scientists, engineers in their various fields. The majority conclusion is that these things are real and under intelligent control. Now, in that group which has reached that conclusion, there is another group, and it's the majority of that one, which believes that these things must be extraterrestrial because they are so far superior to anything we have. They base this on absolutely tracked speeds by radar, visual tracking, and combinations. Now, either all of these witnesses, every one of them, all of the thousands of witnesses here and abroad, are absolutely wrong, honestly wrong, but they're wrong. They're unable to distinguish what they see in the sky. I'm talking about pilots now. They cannot read radar scopes as well as they should. They can't track things with the cinetheodolites or modern tracking devices. They make mistakes. All of them are wrong. Not one single man is right, or else these things are real, and there is secrecy, and the facts are being withheld.
Flying saucers arouse so much public interest, there are several organizations established, and many salaries paid to find out what they are, or just to talk about them. Another who makes his living from flying saucers is the editor of a magazine called Flying Saucer News, published in California. James Mosley tells his opinion.
These things are able to make right-angle turns. They make no noise such as our jets make, and they travel at speeds which are incredible even today. So I don't believe it's anything that we have here on Earth as far as the known Earth governments are concerned.
You're convinced they're things?
Absolutely solid objects, yes, sir.
Why?
Because in some cases they've even bounced bullets off them, in many cases. Teenagers out in California a couple of months ago shot at one of these things and heard the ping of the metal before the object took off.
What might be there? UFO means unidentified flying object.
Well, of course, we think that it could be from another planet, but we can't prove it. It could be some part of our natural environment of the Earth, which is unknown to our present-day science. If I knew what flying saucers really were, I'd be perhaps in Washington as an advisor to the government. I certainly don't know what they are.
As we mentioned, the chief Air Force investigator is Dr. J. Allen Hynek.
None of the evidence that I have examined would indicate any proof at all that we are being visited by extraterrestrials.
How many unexplained cases are there?
Something like 646 out of 10,000.
But you're confident there are explanations which just have not yet been discovered, is that right?
I think there's a possibly a whole spectrum of explanations, and one should not jump either to saying something is utter bilge and nonsense, or jump to the other conclusion that we are being visited. There are probably hypotheses and answers in between.
But Kehoe tells of a case he knows that convinces him flying saucers exist.
This was a report by the commander of a Navy Super Constellation transport, which was flying the Atlantic, from Newport, from Europe, to Gander, bringing back Navy crews that had been on duty in the European area. They were flying at 19,000 feet and about 100 miles out of Gander when they saw some lights down, apparently on the surface of the water, very close to it.
the captain back to take a look, and immediately these lights spread out very rapidly and disappeared, except for one, which came straight up toward them, and of course increasing in size. And it, when it got to their level, it could be seen as a huge flying disc about 350 feet in diameter. They described it as roughly four times the a diameter, four times the wingspan of the Connie. This object came at them so rapidly that the commander and everyone in the cockpit thought they were going to be hit head on. It flipped to one side, past the wing, and came back so swiftly that no one knows whether it merely stopped and reversed or whether it made a lightning-like turn and came back. But at any rate, within a few moments, it was back pacing this Navy transport. It did it for about 10 seconds, and then it tilted up and climbed out of sight at a speed of about between 2 and 3 Mach. That was in 1956, but I regard it as an especially important case because this commander, they were all interrogated by Air Force Intelligence at Gander and later by Naval Intelligence when they got down to Patuxent. 2 days later, the commander was visited by a scientist from a super-secret agency in Washington, and that's as far as I'll go to naming it, but you can guess what it was. He had a folder of photographs, not sketches, but photographs, and he showed these to the commander, and the commander said, it looked just about like this one, and picked out a photograph of a flying disc. And then he asked the scientist, said, I had always thought this was nonsense, until the other night, we were scared to death by this thing. What's going on? And in effect, the scientist said, thank you, Commander, and picked up these photographs and left.
In an effort to balance this program with all views, I asked the Air Force for a spokesman to present more of the official reaction to UFOs. I was told the Air Force has no spokesman because, I was told, every time a spokesman is put on the air or in print, somebody tries to make the Air Force look silly. Incidentally, the CBS television network will present a special program this summer concerning UFOs, and the Air Force has named a spokesman for that program. I asked Lieutenant Colonel Hal Harlan, Chief of the Broadcasting Branch of the Air Force Office of Information, why them and not us. He said they had promised to make the Air Force look good. That may be one of the few times a federal official has openly stated he will help those who make him or them look good. The Air Force did provide me with a 12-page pamphlet concerning their investigations, which works under the code name Project Blue Book. From that pamphlet, this statement. To date, the firm conclusions of Project Blue Book are 1. No unidentified flying object reported, investigated, and evaluated by the Air Force has ever given any indication of threat to our national security. 2. There has been no evidence submitted to or discovered by the Air Force that sightings categorized as unidentified represent technological developments or principles beyond the range of present-day scientific knowledge. And 3. There has been no evidence indicating that sightings categorized as unidentified are extraterrestrial vehicles. You'll recall that Al Chop was the information officer in the early 50s for the Air Force, and he investigated about a dozen incidents during that time. What does he, personally and as a representative of no organization, what does he think they are?
In the early days of this investigation, I was, like most everyone else, I believe that a startling piece of news was imminent, that we would find that these things were interplanetary spaceships. And the evidence at that time, at least the eyewitness sightings, seemed to point that way, and so perhaps it was wishful thinking in a way, because man is always intrigued about the possibility of intelligent life on other planets or from other star systems visiting us or... and perhaps giving us the benefit of a very advanced technology. However, the lack of these things to come to pass over the past 20 years, I am now quite convinced that this is a natural phenomenon of some sort that will continue. And I don't see any end to the controversy of whether they are interplanetary vehicles or not interplanetary vehicles. And I don't think anything can be proved from a scientific standpoint because there is a lack of material substance that can be analyzed.
Dr. Bruce Rogers is Professor Emeritus of Mechanical Engineering from the University of Texas and, incidentally, a member of the Board of Governors of NICAP. What does he think?
I mean, there's no use of arguing about the matter. Let's get some measurements if we can.
We found most university professors in such fields as physics, astronomy, and so on extremely reluctant to comment on flying saucers. Even some who told us flatly, "I don't believe in the things," refused to say that on the air. There were several, though, who felt the public has a right to know how scientifically trained minds regard these UFOs. Such a man is Dr. Tom Hudson, Assistant Professor of Physics at the University of Houston. Again, the simple question, what are they?
Well, certainly, out of all of the observations that have been made, some people saw something, and I don't know how much more than that you can see. Some of the observations have been made by people who were trained to make observations, such as a deputy sheriff, or in some cases, say, an airline pilot sees something, or someone else who's a trained observer, but does not have a scientific background. The trouble with trying to then break this further down is it's the person who's trying to analyze and discover what this object was that was seen has to take statements from a non-scientific person and extrapolate these statements into what he thinks the scientific explanation of what this individual saw could be. And the problems here are just insurmountable. In fact, in any other form of scientific research, this would be you just wouldn't accept such an observation as being a valid scientific observation, but this is the best you have in this case, so you try to go from there.
Richard Hall, Assistant Director of NICAP, disagrees.
A number of astronomers, physicists, chemists, mathematicians, biologists, and other trained scientists, including engineers, have reported UFOs. One section of our report will detail their sighting.
The director of Houston's Birk Baker Planetarium is Dr. Armand Iramadige. KPRC's Ray Norton spent quite a bit of time with this astronomer discussing what UFOs may or may not be. Dr. Iramadige gave this answer to Ray's question of what are they, and the answer is so complete it may stand as a basic lesson in flying saucer watching.
By definition, we say UFOs, unidentified flying objects. Unidentified means that they must not be known celestial objects or known celestial phenomena or known natural phenomena. And of course, in the planetarium field, in the astronomical field, we know the celestial objects, what they might be. Many people report even meteors or bolides. That is, very large meteors or fireballs that are seen in the sky. They stream through the sky and sometimes in red or blue or white or green. They're immense fireballs. They're not seen frequently, but every now and then they do streak through the sky, and they're large objects that strike through the Earth's atmosphere and burn up. And as they burn up, of course, we see this tremendous glow. These, of course, are identifiable. We know, and we can, by good description and through several observations, be able to identify these as, and therefore they are no longer UFOs. The reason I want to bring this up before answering your question more directly is because we do get a lot of calls.
Does the planetarium get calls?
Yes, we do get calls frequently about these things, and also the Air Force frequently will call us when they get a report and they want to see if this report might have a celestial explanation, something astronomical. And so I just want to take advantage of this point right now and and indicate some of the things that have been seen and are definitely celestial. Another important thing that is seen frequently is the planet Venus. The planet Venus is an extremely brilliant planet in the mornings now. It can be seen before the sun rises around 5:30 in the morning, and it's so extremely brilliant, so much more brilliant than any other star or other celestial object, that people frequently are just surprised at seeing this tremendously bright object in the eastern sky. And since the Earth rotates, it rises in the east and goes higher and higher in the sky until the sun comes up, so they see it move. And for the moment, they might not be aware that the whole sky is moving because of Earth rotation. So this is another object that we frequently get, with another object that is referred to as unidentified until they check and find that it could be the planet Venus. There are other celestial objects. A person, for example, noticed that there was a star close to the moon, and a few hours later, the star was at a different place in the sky with respect to the moon. The reason for this is that the moon revolves around the Earth, and over a period of 1 hour, an object will move one Earth diameter away from its previous position. That is, the moon is moving toward the east. The star would move toward the west from the moon, one moon diameter every hour. And so these objects are seen to move, and again, they cannot explain what it is. And of course, here's a known object, just a star, and the motion of the moon causes it to move that way. Other objects that people see are satellites such as the Echo 1 and 2 and Pegasus. Some are going in a polar orbit, that is moving roughly north and south, and others east-west, in an east-to-west direction, or vice versa. So these are moving star-like objects. Some glow rather brilliantly.
Are there particular times in the orbit when the sun will catch them and make them glint?
Exactly. In fact, that's another thing that makes them strange. They expect to see it lit up from one horizon to the other. But it might be that a satellite will glow close to the horizon and then blink off because it goes into the Earth's shadow. It's eclipsed, in effect, by the Earth's shadow. Others will glow only while they're close to the zenith, because they're low enough that only when they are at a high point will the sun's glow reflect on them. And others, of course, at different portions of their orbit will glow. So these objects, it seems, usually will occur only once. It will not blink twice.
Mm-hmm.
It will, while it's eclipsed, be dark. It will brighten and then, of course, become dark again. So satellites is another celestial phenomena that's frequently misinterpreted, because people do not look up the sky enough and realize what some of the things can be. And of course, as we said, meteors and bolides are moving very quickly, and there are not too many bolides, but nevertheless, that is frequently reported. The planet Jupiter is a very brilliant one. It does not twinkle. None of the planets, when they're relatively high in the sky, twinkle. Only when they're low and close to the horizon do planets twinkle. Stars twinkle. So twinkling objects usually are stars, and if they give a steady light, they're planets. Jupiter at times, because people don't realize that the planet can be so bright, is reported as an unknown. Now, getting to your initial question, which I avoided with good reason, what are these UFOs? These that cannot be identified as natural phenomena, either celestial or meteorological, that is a weather type of thing. I might mention before going to this, you see I'm trying to avoid your question.
anyone does.
A sundog is another object that can be seen during the daytime. There's a halo, sometimes two halos, around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes one tiny portion of this halo, 22 or 46 degrees away from the sun, just a tiny portion of it glows, and it may be red or some other color of the rainbow, or just white. And so it appears at these two angles from the sun. It's due to refraction from the high ice particles in the sky. And so sometimes these appear as unknown objects.
In other words, you would say that a great percentage of the many thousands of sightings can be contributed to astronomical and celestial phenomena.
Yes. In fact, recently you might have heard of this object that struck a car on
mm-hmm.
Highway 10.
That's right.
We don't know what it was. We investigated it. We searched through all the areas where the grass was relatively sharp, but there are areas that are that have cattails and deep grass, and so the object might have ricocheted into off the road, and so we cannot report on that. But that could have been a meteorite, and of course it was in hopes that it was that we did this search.
Mm-hmm.
But now, once we eliminate all these, and that's where maybe several, many thousands of these objects end up as being, we arrive at these that are unidentified, really cannot be explained by science today.
Mm-hmm.
There was one, for example, two colonels saw, they were command pilots working in the Pentagon, and it's reported in Project Blue Book. They saw two objects, two delta wing objects, stream by them extremely fast, and they knew that the speed of these, they know the delta wings, they knew the F-86s perfectly well, and this, I think, was in 1952. It was during the around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and yet they were going towards Salt Lake City over Carson Sink in Nevada. Yet they knew that nothing, that no airplane could have gone at that speed. They saw no canopy or tail on it. This was going at a tremendous speed by their plane. They worked for the Pentagon. They knew perfectly well how to recognize anything that the United States has in the air. These two objects streamed by them extremely fast speed and took a slight bank and then disappeared. There were no known F-86s or other possible airplanes that could have been that close to them. This is a UFO, a valid UFO. At least it cannot be identified. And then the question that you asked me is difficult to answer. We don't know what celestial phenomena can explain. Certainly we know of no celestial phenomena at this time. Science does not know. That could explain these types of sightings. And it's for this reason that no one wishes to be to comment on as to what they could be. We just don't know. People who are highly scientifically trained and should certainly identify the known objects that it could possibly be will not say what it was. They know what they saw and they describe what they saw. And certainly this is the reason that right now the Secretary of the Air Force is being prodded into establishing a committee, possibly of civilians, to study these phenomena, what they are. Of course, I can't say what they are. All we can say is that these people must see something and that they're not creating a hoax or lying. They're seeing something and we just can't define what it is.
We ask our favorite question of a man who had seen something that cannot be explained. Chief Deputy Billy McCoy, what was it?
I have no earthly idea of what it was. I'm a firm believer in the fact that it wasn't something from this earth. I don't believe that the United States government or any government on this earth could have a craft like we saw and could have kept it from the public this long. I don't believe that if they had a craft, of this kind, that it certainly wouldn't have been down in the area at night that we saw it in, just fooling around.
Still confused? On the next section of Spectrum 95, coming up in a few minutes, we'll discuss some of the theories and the charges of Air Force secrecy. But now, let's pause for the news. Spectrum 95, Part 3, The Flying Saucer Flap, Energy Pockets and Little Green Men.
Whoa.
ago, the conception of little green men became attached to flying saucers. The effect is more serious than it sounds on the surface, because many persons, fearing ridicule by their friends, will spot an object and refuse to report it, because jokers will say, "Did you see any little green men?" Don Berliner is a freelance science writer who makes his home in Washington. But most of his time is spent away from the typewriter and out as a volunteer for NICAP. He recently talked about men from other worlds.
As far as reports of beings in UFOs, the great majority of these reports are in the hoax category. As the Major mentioned, the late George Adamski made quite a stir some years ago writing books about his fanciful trips to various planets in flying saucers and of the golden-haired space beings that he had met. We investigated this man quite thoroughly because of all the stir that he created, and discovered that most of his claimed background was completely fraudulent. He claimed at one time to be an astronomer from Mount Palomar. Now, this is rather impressive on the face of it, but it turns out that he was located at Mount Palomar, and he had a telescope, but the telescope was parked right outside his hamburger stand. This is, unfortunately, this the sort of thing we do run into. However, there is at least one case of a reported occupant of a UFO, which seems quite substantial. The Air Force agrees with us that the case is definitely not explainable as anything conventional. It occurred in April of 64 in Socorro, New Mexico, where a highly respected police officer who had had quite a bit of experience tracking meteors with the New Mexico Institute of Meteoritics reported seeing two small suited occupants near a UFO, which after it left imprints in the ground and scorch marks on the mesquite bushes and the earth. Dr. Hynek, the Air Force investigator, was on the scene, and our man was on the scene. And when Dr. Hynek left, he admitted openly that he was more puzzled than when he had arrived. So this is perhaps the only case where an occupant of one of these craft has been reported, which has really stood up under investigation.
Could there be life elsewhere in this universe? Armand Iramadege.
It's my assumption, and I think I'm right, that it's not beyond the realm of possibility that there is some form of life on another planet in our galaxy or around another star, another sun. Is this right?
I think that is quite possible. In fact, it's probable that among the billions of stars in our own galaxy, there would be many that would have planets. In fact, many of the stars have other stars going around them, and these are called binary stars. So it's not at all impossible that in the same fashion in which such a tremendous number of stars do have other bodies going around them, that these other bodies could be totally inert, planets that go around them. And these planets, in all probability, somewhere in our galaxy, among these billions of stars, certainly it's within the realm of possibility that there could be life on some of these planets that have evolved through normal changes of temperature as these planets would form.
One of the real puzzlers in UFO investigating history has been several instances of radioactivity found after a sighting. Major Donald Kehoe.
Some of those there isn't any question about. They've been down. In one case, the ground was found highly radioactive. One of these things touched for a few moments. This was up in Virginia about a year and 2 months ago. It was one of those reports which, when I first heard of it, I thought, well, that's nonsense. And then two DuPont Company engineers went in there with Geiger counters and checked it, and they said it was very hot.
Dr. Bruce Rogers.
What could cause this?
That's the thing that I'd like to know. I mean, if we could tell what caused it, if there was radioactivity, if we knew some other things, we might be able to get a start on what kind of a power plant these things have, if there is such a thing as a flying saucer.
Al Chop.
here we're making conjecture now that there are solid objects. I'm not sure anymore that there are. When I say a phenomena, it could be a source of light or it could be energy in the atmosphere. And I don't know very much about that, but some of the scientists feel that there may be some blobs of pure energy floating around. Maybe perhaps as a function of something that comes from the sun.
Dr. Tom Hudson.
Perhaps. All you can say is that maybe. I think that geologically there are some other forms of energy. I don't know the form or context it takes, but I have heard of this concept of ball lightning, which is a glowing circular ball of some type of plasma that may have has been observed in our atmosphere. But what it is, what causes it, where it goes, I don't think that it's generally known or accepted any particular theory.
As you heard earlier, one of the charges that Major Donald Kehoe has leveled against the Air Force is secrecy.
All of them are wrong. Not one single man is right, or else these things are real, and there is secrecy, and the facts are being withheld.
Major, do you believe that if the Pentagon knows about whatever the truth here is, that the president also must inevitably know about it, and therefore the president is at the top, the one who's responsible for not letting the public have the facts? Can there be any other suggestion in what you say?
I don't believe it's absolutely certain that the president has all these details, because I remember back to when President Truman called for a briefing during some excitement during his second administration, I believe it was. He had known nothing about it except what he read in the newspapers, according to what this intelligence officer told me. And it was Captain Edward Ruppel, head of the project at that time. He gave the president a rather thorough briefing and said that they didn't find any definite proof that these were or were not space devices. They certainly didn't see any evidence of hostility. Therefore, they weren't too much concerned. That was, however, they were concerned because there was a terrific outbreak of sightings right at that time, and they were the headlines all over the country.
Since the Air Force would not provide us with a spokesman to answer this charge, we had to look elsewhere for an answer. We want to make this report as objective and unbiased as possible. Actually, NICAP provided the answer, a tape recording from 1961 when the Air Force did have a spokesman. Then Major William Coleman, who had this to say about the secrecy charges. Again, let me remind you that this was 5 years ago.
There is no truth to the charges and allegations that the Air Force is withholding information from the public on this subject. We do, in some cases, withhold the names of the people involved in the sightings because it would attract the idle curiosity of sensation seekers. In some limited instances, we'll withhold information on our investigative techniques because we use these techniques to evaluate other intelligence information. And finally, we withhold information in some limited instances because we could possibly reveal sensitive areas within our air defense system. In any case, withholding of information is done for strictly legitimate security reasons.
Al Chopp was among the first to take part in Air Force investigations. We asked him about the secrecy charge.
Well, I don't think that the Air Force does put out the sightings on a regular basis, and I don't know the reasoning why they don't. I know we did not when I was with the project. The person making inquiry had to be specific about which sighting he wanted the details on, and if he could do this, we would give him the details.
All of the details?
All of the details pertaining to a particular sighting that he had to identify. However, most of the sightings in those days, at least, were made by pilots and military personnel, and of course the general public didn't know they had been made or reported. But I don't think the Air Force is deliberately withholding information. I think the information is not forthcoming simply because the Air Force doesn't have it. I'm sure if the Air Force had the answer to this enigma, they would be more than happy to scratch it off their books and explain it to the public.
Dr. Tom Hudson from the University of Houston then made this logical observation.
I can see no advantage to the Air Force to withhold information. If it were a foreign country's device, then the Air Force could probably get money to build one of their own from Congress if they could show that somebody else had one of these and we didn't get one, we were going to be behind. If it were from outer space, well, we could perhaps get more money in the space budget to make contact with these alien beings and look at all of the scientific advancement they could provide us, and, you know, all the money we would save by taking advantages of their progress.
Our examination of the flying saucer flap has been, by necessity, a brief one, and we only skimmed the surface of officials. But in all fairness, it should be pointed out that we did not encounter any Air Force secrecy in our investigation. We did note several curious quirks that, in my opinion, could be changed to the betterment of all concerned. First, for information on Project Blue Book, we call the project's headquarters at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. They were cordial, but when I said I am a newsman, Project Blue Book referred me immediately to their information officer. This, I found out in a moment, was not at Wright-Patterson, where the investigations are being conducted, but at the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., nearly 400 miles away. Not even at the Pentagon is there a Project Blue Book officer, but the reports are disseminated through the Air Force Information Office. Since almost every Air Force base in the world has its own staff of information officers, this seems a strange departure from the normal, especially because of the high interest of this project. The Air Force did provide me with their Project Blue Book, which was a disappointment. It's only 12 pages long. Of those, one page is devoted to listing those materials which the Air Force no longer has available. One page is a list of suggested reading material on astronomy, physics, and UFOs. Incidentally, this may be part of the bad blood between NICAP and the Air Force, because Donald Keough's books are not listed. Two pages of Project Blue Book are given over to sightings of meteors, and the last page is blank. The seven remaining pages of Project Blue Book are a description of the Air Force's program and a statistical summary, but no specifics, on UFOs since 1947. In comparison, NICAP's book, entitled The UFO Evidence, is nearly 200 pages long, contains 200,000 words, and many specific examples. The Air Force's is free. NICAP's costs $5. More in a moment. What can be done to find out the origin, whether earth-locked or extraterrestrial, of these mysteries? There are several plans, some reasonable, some, well, for instance, a retired Army major named Wayne Aho says he is negotiating to place observers in the 600-foot-high Space Needle at the Seattle World's Fair site. This former Army intelligence officer says he plans to place two spotters armed with telescopes or binoculars on both sides of the tower and keep them on duty night and day to look for flying saucers. Is the Air Force currently doing a competent job of investigating? Congressman George Miller, chairman of the House Space Sciences Committee, says yes. Congressman Mendel Rivers, chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, says yes. And this rules out a congressional hearing on the matter. So we ask Armand Iromadige.
And I think that the Air Force is being concerned with the defense of our country and certainly wishing to advance our scientific knowledge as much as possible of anything that can possibly be seen in the sky would be that branch of government that could best handle this, the investigation. However, I do think that possibly a committee at congressional level, that is possibly appointed by the president or Congress, should have the right to, would actually be the body that would determine policy, overall policy. And the Air Force should be the one to carry out the studies. They're the best qualified. They certainly have the personnel, and I think they're the ones that should do it.
Dr. Rogers of the University of Texas feels differently.
Do you think another government agency besides the Air Force would be better qualified to investigate?
Personally, I'd rather not have the government in it at all.
You think a private organization such
as NICAP? Private organizations, because as soon as you get into a government, then you've got politics.
Al Chop.
I think the Air Force is doing everything it can and everything that is possible. You have to remember you're dealing with sighting reports. You're not dealing with objects or something that's physical matter that you can hold in your hand or analyze or put under a microscope. Measure. These are things the scientist needs to do in order to tell you definitely what these things are. I think on the basis of investigating sighting reports, verbal from people, and a scattering of still pictures, the Air Force is doing everything humanly possible. And they certainly are doing it in a serious vein. I don't think they mean to ridicule anybody, but it's a kind of an impossible task.
Tom Hudson.
My own opinion is they're doing as good as anyone else and probably better than most would do because of the vast physical facilities that are already in place that they can call on to track an object if it makes a radar pattern, or they can call on a fast fighter to go up and see what this object is, or if there's an object in this particular point in the sky that's been observed, and no other federal agency could do this without going through somebody.
Here's how the Air Force investigated the Brazoria County episode.
Major Leach come down from Ellington, and he brought an artist with him. We went over to that area. They drawed a whole sketch of the area, put in everything that was there, drew in the craft as we described it, in the vicinity that we described it, took a bunch of radiological readings over there. They didn't find anything. We'd had a couple of showers of rain since then. The area was scrutinized very thoroughly by them, and they took statements from Mr. Good and myself. This was all forwarded then to Wright Patterson. Professor Heinick called me on the telephone. I spent probably an hour on the phone with him going over all this.
Yes,
he was triangling all of the degrees in our position and how we saw it and all. And this has been the last that I've heard of them, but those people treated us very nice. They were just as seemed to be just as concerned about this thing as we were, and I couldn't ask for any more cooperation or any better investigation than they'd done that I know of.
The Air Force plans to delve into its investigation even more thoroughly. Dr. Heinick says he will pick a score of unexplained cases for closer scrutiny.
I picked some 20 cases. Nothing particular about 20 is a number, but just I thought, let's see what are some that have not been explained and which have possible scientific pay dirt in them. And I think those I would recommend that they be looked at quite closely.
The flying saucer flap has flapped so loudly recently that the Secretary of the Air Force has been stirred to action. A civilian board to investigate the Air Force's investigations in an attempt to determine whether charges by Kehoe and others are valid.
There was a lot of discussion this morning, Mr. Secretary, about a civilian board that would pick out some of the more interesting cases and investigate them. How's that going to work?
Well, Air Force has a civilian scientific advisory board. We've had a panel of that board examine the way that we've been handling these investigations, and they say they're quite satisfied, but that they think that there may be some more scientific data to gain by making an investigation in further depth by some such panel, and I'm certainly willing to consider that. I think it may be very desirable to do.
Does that mean you're going to go ahead with a civilian group?
We have already, and I think we will continue it and perhaps expand it.
A final observation on this flying saucer flap of 20 years. When I contacted the Air Force Information Office while investigating the charges by Major Kehoe, I confronted Lieutenant Colonel Harlan of the Pentagon with Kehoe's statements. Harlan said that Kehoe is a private citizen and entitled to his views like everybody else. Kehoe is not only a private citizen. He heads the largest private organization in the country investigating these reported sightings. In addition, he is a retired military officer, a pilot, and a firm believer in flying saucers. Perhaps he has gone too far in stating, without sufficient scientific evidence, that these things are from outer space. But it seems the nation might be better served if this private organization and the Air Force were to patch up their differences, bury the swamp gas, so to speak, and consolidate their efforts. Such a precedent has been set with the Civil Air Patrol, again with civil defense. NICAP might be more useful if the Air Force were to brief NICAP members on how to investigate sightings, the questions to ask, official reports to submit. A study of these things by 5,000 volunteers all over the nation, reporting facts to a hard core of top flight scientists and engineers, could do no harm, and such an investigation would certainly provide more information than, say, a congressional hearing, for instance. The differences between NICAP and the Air Force seem to be surmountable, with only a little compromise on the part of each. This is Al Moffitt, KPRZ News, reporting on the flying saucer flap.